Welcome to Historical Jesus. I'm Mark Vinette. His reputation for paranoia and ruthlessness was well-deserved. King Herod the Great was called King of the Jews and ruled Judea to the year 4 BC. Let's learn more about this titan of history from Seth Schwartz, professor of classical Jewish civilization at New York City's Columbia University.
At the time of Herod, the period of the kingship of Herod, the kingdom of Judea, probably the greatest of his many construction projects was the Herodian temple. That was one of his many construction projects. We don't know much about what the pre-Herodian temple looked like. We get the impression that it was pretty small and that it occupied about a third of what we now think of as the Temple Mount of the Haram al-Sharif. It was much smaller. We know that that platform is artificial and that it was constructed under Herod and that the idea was to massively increase the size of the temple compound, which it did. So he started building from scratch. He knocked down the old building. He created a completely new artificial platform surrounded by a set of retaining walls. That's what you see if you go and visit the Western Wall in Jerusalem. That's a retaining wall for the artificial platform of the Temple Mount. He built a massive, very ornate structure on it and also did a tremendous amount of construction around it to enable access to the renewed Temple Mount. So this was a massive project, and it's not clear whether we can really always attribute strategic thought to Herod. Was Herod doing this in order to please the Jews? Well, I don't know. He might have been doing it to please himself. Josephus says that all of Herod's building was done to aggrandize himself. Maybe that's true. We don't really know. But viewed from a certain distance, we can see that it was functional, that he's building the city of Sebaste on the ruins of the very ancient city of Samaria, which is there to serve as a base for Roman auxiliary troops of local origin in 50 miles, 80, 90 kilometers north of Jerusalem. And then he's building Caesarea Maritima, which is shared uneasily by Greeks or Syrians or whatever they are and Jews, but which is clearly also a great kiss on the ass of Augustus. The city is named after him. In the harbor, overlooking the harbor, was a great temple dedicated to Augustus and Rome. In the east, Augustus was worshipped while still alive, which wasn't done in the west, but he built in the temple of Augustus in Rome. And he also funded all sorts of construction projects in cities in the vicinity, basically cities in the old Hellenistic world. So in Antioch and northern Syria and in a few places in Asia Minor and in Greece, gave a lot of money to Rhodes. Someone discovered a statue there with a partly preserved inscribed base, which seemed to be a statue of a member of the Herodian family. If you made a donation to a place, they would erect a statue in your honor. There were probably many other statues of Herod and his family floating around the eastern part of the Roman Empire. So Herod was trying to behave like a benefactor to every place, but within his kingdom, he was doing more or less the same thing, but in much more intensive way. And it looks like it was an attempt to please all constituents. Now, we could ask, and I'm sure the question was floating around in Herod's time also, whether it wasn't a zero-sum game. In other words, if you're supporting the Greeks, you can't be supporting the Jews, really, even if you're pretending to. And conversely, if you're supporting the Jews, you can't really be supporting the Greeks. And I'm not even mentioning the fact that there were whole areas on the edge of the Syrian desert in the northeastern part of Herod's kingdom, which were neither Greek nor Jewish, but which were inhabited by partly nomadic tribes who had probably emerged from the Arabian Peninsula. The people have Arabic names, but the writing is in either Aramaic or Greek, people similar to the Nabataeans. So there's more. There's also those people. And those areas, there are temples and inscriptions dedicated to the Herodian family up there. And in some sense, that was probably the part of the kingdom where support for Herod and his family was the least complicated. Whereas in the Greek part of the kingdom and in the Jewish part of the kingdom, Samaritan part of the kingdom, it was more complicated. It seemed to be more tension producing. Josephus says explicitly that he married his wives for their beauty and not for their family. That's what he says. And since Herod had 10 wives, it's not at all unlikely that that's true of even a fairly large percentage of them. Maybe 50% of them he married for their beauty. But there were still the cases where it's clear that he's marrying into constituencies. He has an old wife from before he was king. It seems to have been an Idumean woman. He may or may not split with her. She actually returns later on, but then he marries 100% Hasmonean princess, which is a very fraught relationship, probably towards the beginning of his kingship in the year 36 or so. He marries this Hasmonean princess. Of course, at the same time, he's systematically extirpating the Hasmonean family, which clearly adds to the tension of the relationship. The way Josephus presents it is that Mariamne, which was her name, that's the Greek spelling of Miriam, was a very noble person who loathed Herod and also despised him. She looked down on him because he was a commoner. So she hated him, but also because he killed her grandfather, and then he had her brother drowned, and eventually killed her mother, and then eventually killed her. But Herod was desperately in love with her, according to Josephus. He was just irrationally, wildly in love with her. And even though he suspected her of infidelity, which was untrue, but he also had really good reason to suspect that she was plotting against him, he held off because he couldn't bring himself to do what needed to be done. And then he had 5 children with her also. But then he did. Within a few years, he actually had her tried and executed as well, and then eventually executed her 2 sons towards the end of his reign. So he had his dealings with legitimacy problems, problems with attracting constituencies. He thought it would help him to marry into the leading Hasmonean family, but personally, it seems to have harmed him. I think we can be a little bit more hard-headed about things than Josephus is. Josephus is part of a literary tradition which is trying to present Herod as a victim of his passions and not as a victimizer. I think we could say that he married Mariamne because she was an important person for him to marry, and the main thing was to have children by her. Once that task was completed, she was gone, together with the rest of her family. It took another 25 years to execute the sons. The sources do kind of agree that in his last year, he had gone off the rails and he was really behaving with markedly more cruel way. I mean, he was always cruel to his family. He had never hesitated to execute or assassinate members of his family. But towards the end, the cruelty spread. He was killing a lot of people for not always the most convincing reasons. It must have been very widespread in Judea towards the end of Herod's reign that he had gone off the rails and that was increasingly unsafe to be around him. A lot of the turbulence in the last 10 years or so of Herod's life concerned the question of who would succeed him. So you had the different sons plotting against each other and fighting with each other, and this is what led to the execution of almost all of them. Herod's oldest son from his first wife made a pitch for his own candidacy to succeed Herod, and Herod actually felt more kinship with him. He wasn't as jealous of this oldest son, but then the 2 sons of Mariamne, who were named Alexander and Aristobulus, also assumed that as the leading sons in terms of their inheritance, and also they could make a claim for a certain kind of popularity because they were also Hasmoneans. They were also plotting. They were plotting against Antipater. They were plotting against each other and definitely engaged in some sort of shenanigans. It would have been wise just to wait for Herod to die, but they wanted Herod to change his will. They were fighting over Herod's will and over who was going to be named successor. When push came to shove, Herod did not get the chance to decide who would succeed him. In about 7 BCE, and this was a trial actually conducted in the presence of the emperor, he successfully accused Alexander and Aristobulus of plotting against him, and they were executed. And then shortly after that, he began to get suspicious of his oldest son, Antipater, also, and he had him executed too. So there were none of the leading candidates left. And in the end, Augustus simply divided up his kingdom among a few of the remaining sons, who were the children of minor wives. And there was mixed success there. So in a way, Rome just sort of asserted itself right away. And 2 of those rulers, Antipas, known in the New Testament as Herod, Antipas in Galilee, and Philip in that northeastern corner of Herod's old kingdom, lasted a very long time, and they were very successful, apparently. Philip lasted until the year 39, starting in the year 4 BCE. He had an immensely long reign. Antipas lasted until the year 34, and he didn't die. He was removed from office and sent off to a dreadful and fearsome exile in the south of France, and they were very successful. But the one who was appointed to rule that central core of the country, Samaria, Judea, and Idumea, named Archelaus, was cruel and incompetent, and he was removed by Augustus after 9 or 10 years. And at that point, the country was ruled not by a proper Roman governor, but by a prefect, that is a personal representative of the emperor. The status of the country was temporary. How authority was divided within the area is a French scholar a few years ago published an over 1,000-page book trying to figure out how the country worked in the period after the deposition of Archelaus without success. There are all these centers of authority because the Herodian family, who were no longer ruling Judea, still had authority. The high priest of the Jerusalem temple had some sort of authority. The city councils in places where there were cities along the coast had some sort of authority. The Roman governor of Syria, who controlled three legions and was the grandest Roman personage in the vicinity, also had some kind of authority. And exactly whose jurisdiction ended where and how was very problematic. It has to be said that it's not only in Christian tradition that Herod remembered and regarded as evil and cruel. The later Jewish tradition also, you know, had a fairly similar picture of him. They also regarded him as evil and cruel in terms like that.
I'm Mark Vinette. Thank you for sharing your time with me. Doctors endorse it, nutritionists recommend it, and customers love it. Calotrin Healthy Weight Loss. Ron in Texas lost 35 pounds. Marie in Pennsylvania lost 117 pounds with Calotrin. Diane not only lost weight, but she also found relief from arthritis. Lynn lost over 45 pounds. Calotrin contains collagen, the most abundant protein naturally occurring in the human body, which decreases as we age. Taking Calotrin promotes better sleep, more energy, less joint pain, and best of all, weight loss. Calotrin has an amazing 86% success rate with their 90-day supply. And this week, take advantage of their President's Day sale. Buy the 90-day supply and get an extra month free, plus free shipping. Ordering is so easy. Just text the word HISTORY to the code 30605, and we'll send you a link to this special offer. Again, text HISTORY, that's HISTORY, using the code 30605.